Transmitting to you from Old Heart Radio.
Prepare to have your bones chilled and your hairs raised. It's the Whack Arnold's Brothers Podcast.
Welcome home.
Yeah.
My goodness gracious. This is episode 94.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Six away. Damn. Yeah. Not, yeah. This one's 94. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
We're on track now. Sounds like you might have been working on your own Perkins jingle.
Me? Yeah. I just got those jingles stuck in my head, boy. Like that's the crazy thing. I'm like walking around doing work errands going, you know, like after a hard day of working, I wanna go to Perkins.
Yeah.
It's like stuck in my head, man. You know, or like Perkins yeah. time.
When the errands are done, you just wanna have fun.
Time to go see your favorite fucking server over at Perkins, man.
Perkins style. Oh my dude. God.
It's always Perkins classic. Time, man. Yeah, that one is. That'll go down, you know, as a Perkins classic. 20 years from now, they'll be like, damn, that kicked off the whole Perkins music empire right there. Perkins time.
Yeah, they're trying to like, you know, Will Smith is a busy man. Mm. They're trying to figure out like to see if he'd be willing to come in and do like a special version of that. You know, he's obviously the original. You know, DJ Jazzy Jeff. So trying to figuring out a way to have him come in and, you know, spit a new verse for the Perkins time.
That'd be legit. You know, I mean, who better to represent a fine dining establishment with the dishes like fresh caught tilapia than the Fresh Prince himself, you know?
Yeah,
the Fresh Prince comes in, does a set, and then everybody gets a free fresh tilapia dinner.
Yeah, that sounds like a great night.
Yeah, dude, I think that's how they should. Like from now on, any franchise of Perkins that opens should have DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, and you know. We'll obviously be there too because we're the bigger Perkins stars at this point. So
yeah,
you know, we'll be cutting the motherfucking ribbon. Will Smith will just be there spitting some fresh bars. You know, Perkins bars. Yeah,
and that, you know, the that song is like so perfectly 90s. It's not even funny.
Oh yeah, it's true.
Anyways,
nah, I'm always feeling like going to Perkins after work. Wish there's Perkins close by, you know. I'd be a regular. I'd get one of those like punch cards. It's like every 10 tilapia dinners. No, every 10 butterball turkey dinners, you get a free tilapia dinner.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for my own personal parking space at the one over here in Spokane. So
yeah. Reserved.
That way I know for sure I won't get towed. You know what I mean?
It's got my name on the fucking parking space.
Yeah.
Why are you towing me right now? Dude, that manager's ruthless over there.
10 butterball turkey dinners and you get a free tilapia. That's a hell of a deal.
Yeah, that's 2 weeks worth of dinners, and then
you get one for free. Yeah,
you get one for free. That's, you know, if you're dedicated like me, you're eating that butterball turkey 5 nights a week, son. Like after work every night.
You know, I don't know. Fuck me. I don't think I get burnt out on turkey quick, so I don't think I could do that. But now tilapia, yeah, I could do that every night and just be like. You know, especially that Perkins fresh caught.
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah, dude, those fishermen are out there just catching tilapia for the customers.
That's one of my favorite. I think we said that last week. Like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a Perkins fisherman. Shooting for the stars, Billy.
Yeah, boy. I just love the idea of like a just like a fisherman. All, you know, he's got a beard. He's just out there, like it's just sopping wet, but he's wearing a Perkins green like wetsuit with like the P logo on the back, just out there,
yeah,
out there in the high tide, just fishing for tilapia for the customers.
Jesus Christ!
It's thankless, but it's the Lord's work right there. That's for sure.
Yeah,
God dang,
they do deserve a medal.
Yeah. So you know, when going to talk about this week's movie, I realized that for the last like roughly three, maybe four movies that we've picked, they've all been from 1988.
Interesting.
Yeah, except for Tix. Tix was the only one. Slugs, The Nest, and this one here, Grotesque, all from 98. Or 80, 88, excuse me.
Gee, interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny. I was like, man, why do we keep landing on movies from 88? And, you know, truthfully, it was probably just a good year. Stock chock full of every fucking wild card horror movie you could think of.
Yeah, 80s, you know, obviously was like the breeding ground for horror.
Yeah,
I think that we were talking about this before we started recording. I think that this movie had a lot more potential to be better. Had an interesting, you know, concept. Home, you know, I think I've said it before, one of my biggest fears, like real fears from horror movies, is home invasion. With a little twist on that variation. But I don't know. It kind of just didn't reach the expectations that I guess I had set, you know, after reading the plot description, seeing like the movie poster. I was just kind of let down by it.
Yeah. It definitely became like kind of like one of those movies where I couldn't tell like if they tried too hard and didn't have like a good like budget for it to do like everything they wanted, or if they just had like a decent budget and then just didn't know what they were fucking doing. Cause like overall this movie, like it's like we, you know, another thing we mentioned, like it's the only person who's really notable on the cast list, I'd say, is really Linda Blair. And it seems like a weird random movie for Linda Blair.
Absolutely.
Because Linda Blair didn't really do a ton of work, if I'm correct. Right?
It's true though. And I don't know. Obviously, Exorcist is regarded as one of the best horror movies of all time. She has an iconic performance, and it almost just felt like this movie was a waste of her acting talent, I guess. It was just super random. The only, and we'll get back to Linda Blair in a second, but the only other person to note in this movie, and he plays a really small role, is Robert Zadar, who's best known for Maniac Cop and has one of the most unique looking faces on planet Earth. Linda Blair is just it's kind of random.
Do you think Zadar would ever be caught dead at a Perkins?
I don't know.
I think Zadar would probably eat a Perkins. He'd probably eat a whole sampler platter of Perkins items just to himself.
Yeah. I mean, if it was all Mozzies, I would do the same.
Yeah. I mean, who can say that they wouldn't, you know?
Have you watched the trailer yet for the upcoming Exorcist?
No, I haven't.
I know that, like, it's one of those things where people are... Okay, so David Gordon Green is directing it, and obviously Halloween 2018 was, like, fucking phenomenal. Mm. And then the rest are varying quality and, you know, very divisive. So I think there's some people that are worried that because of the property, because of the place in horror history that The Exorcist has, that he's going to let us down. But the trailer definitely inspires hope, and I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be really good.
Nice.
I would go watch it, but the interesting thing is that instead of one person being possessed, it's like two. It's like two little girls that are being possessed. So I think it's going to be interesting. I would go. Yeah, I'm excited for it.
Dang. Yeah, I'll have to check out that trailer. The other super random one is they've dropped, and I'm not like a huge, huge fan of the franchise, but they dropped like a new Saw 10 trailer.
Oh yeah.
Which apparently, well, and like you know, like some like one scene or something like that, where like they allude to one of the traps happening, where it's like a guy has to break all of his fingers one at a time, or like his eyes will get sucked out of like these vacuum tubes.
Okay, so I didn't watch that. Like, I watched the trailer, but I didn't watch like the clip. So, but I was a huge fan of the original Saw and Saw 2. When Saw 2 came out, like, that was a movie that I had in heavy rotation. Hmm. And then the rest, you know, varying quality. But I'm like a sucker for the Saw franchise. So I'll definitely end up seeing that.
I feel like I got kind of burnt out on the overall, like,
absolutely
Saw thing. But I will say the first two really got me too. And apparently, so this new one is supposed to take place in between Saw 1 and Saw 2.
Oh, okay, cool. I didn't read that, but that makes sense. Because, like, at the end of the trailer, and I forget the character's name now, but she's the one that was like a victim in number one, and then you find out in number two that she's his accomplice, but
yeah,
she's like shown at the end of the trailer. So that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah, I think that they just, you know, they were pumping them out every Halloween, you know, for like 7 years, another one was coming out, and, you know. But I still think that, although it wasn't the first of its kind, and you know, we've watched a lot of movies that ended up probably having some what's the word I'm looking for, inspiration, but I do think that it, like, it was one of those things that came out and it had a lot of imitators. And I'm a huge James Wan fan, and I think that at the time it was like something that was super creative and new, and the traps were awesome, all the plot twists in the first two. So I will say that it has, it's going to have its place in horror for that, but yeah, they just ran it into the ground.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, like, you're absolutely right. Saw will, like, Saw's as a property has like cemented itself in, you know, horror history.
Absolutely.
Because of, you know, I mean, it really just became a game changer for horror for a while. Like,
right.
Like so many things tried to emulate its, like,
yep,
gruesomeness and its twists in a way.
Absolutely.
Right. You know, so yeah. But Saw aside.
Yeah. Yeah. We need to get into this.
Yeah. This movie, 1988's Grotesque, is, if you ask me, quite grotesque. It had to be done. It starts out in this like really slow ass fucking opening that just got under my skin after a while. I don't even know. I can't remember what the lady's saying, but there's this lady's like,
I fast forwarded through the opening credits.
Dude, it was so fucking boring. This lady just being like, John, why did we do this or something, John? Yeah, it's like this like voiceover. And then eventually,
because it's like a house, like, there's like a shot of a house and there's like a lightning storm going on through like the whole opening credits. So I just fast forward it.
Yeah, it's, but yeah, so dumb.
Continue.
And so it's like eventually you get to the, you know, the interior of the house where the lady is waiting in her room, and
an old lady.
Yeah, an old lady. And you have this flash of like her being a young lady, but then she goes back to being an old lady. And then she appears to be talking to this entity that is like down the hall or what the fuck ever. And, you know, she's basically like, take me, like, just do it.
And do this, whatever you're gonna do, but do it quickly.
Yeah, this creature who has kind of like yeah, Black Hood kind of has like, you can see sort of like a some sort of monster-esque face. Walks up to her and like, I don't know, sucks her blood or eats her face or what the fuck ever. Chomps on her.
Yeah, doesn't show
it.
She is sitting in a chair, like combing her hair, and she eventually lays back on the bed, and like the creature, or whatever, sucked her blood or bit her neck or whatever.
Yeah, some real true blood shit. And anyway, pulls away, and like the lady's young and youthful, sprawled out on the bed. You know, like that's the kind of magic that you only get from a good Perkins meal, by the way.
Yeah, it revitalizes you.
Oh, get you got dang right. That's what I'm talking about. Butterball turkey dinner. But, you know, and then quickly, you basically quickly come out of this whole sequence learning that this is actually a movie being screened in a studio by some executives and the...
It's like a test screening.
Yeah, and the special effects guy. And
Everybody's
like, whoa, those are the best special effects you've ever done and stuff like that to this. What's his name? Orville?
Kruger,
Orville Kruger.
We learned that he's a special effects artist. And you know, he mentions that he, is getting ready to. What's funny is he's like, you know, the guy praises him and is like, yeah, you know, we're gonna get you a bonus too, but we have to wait until the initial money comes in.
But Kruger doesn't really seem to care. He kind of shloves it off anyway. Like, and he makes a mention that he's going to go to his family's cabin in the mountains or something like that.
Yep.
He's got to get out of
Hollywood. For a family reunion.
And that's when it kind of jumps you to the first time you see Linda Blair's character, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
Who I can't even remember who.
Yeah, she's with her friend, Kathy.
That's right.
They seem to be at a nice dining establishment.
I couldn't quite tell if it was a Perkins, but it looked nice enough to be a Perkins.
Sure. I think it was an upscale Perkins. I think
you think so? There's only like five of them in the United States. Perkins.
But they have a brief conversation. Kathy mentioned something about, this unnamed man that didn't call her back and has no bearing on the plot whatsoever. Then we hop in the car with them. You know, we learn that they're on their way up to the house for this weekend getaway at her, you know, parents' house in the cabin. While they're driving along, they, you know, this VW bus full of punks comes by and accosts them as they drive past.
They were quite rude.
Yeah, we'll see more of them. Thank you.
Yeah, they were a little aggressive on the road.
Abrasive,
we'll say.
Yeah. I think they called them like a bitches or something like that.
Dang, dropping hard bees.
You know what's interesting though is it's like one of the most blatant product placement happens in movies.
Oh,
it's like one of the most blatant, like,
dude,
they drive through a Burger King drive-thru.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, and get sodas.
They not only do they drive through the drive-thru, they show you a full shot of that Burger King franchise.
Yeah.
And then they show you them sitting in the drive-thru with like a Burger King employee dressed to the Burger King nines, you know,
handing
soda, giving them their change. You're like, this is a fucking Burger King ad right now.
Yeah, and I think the most baffling part to me was that they just got sodas. Like, they didn't even get anything to eat.
Yeah. You telling me you're not going to get a charbroiled Whopper Jr.? Okay. Get out of here, Linda Blair.
I think we've ran it into the ground with Perkins talk this episode already, but I just wish instead of stopping at a Burger King that they would have stopped at a Perkins and got some key lime pie or something.
Dude, absolutely. But yeah, you're right. So they grab some sodas and they continue on down the way. Eventually, do they stop at the gas station? Before they run into the punkers again?
Yeah, they stop at like a market. Like maybe it was a gas station, but
just it was like a small town
like market.
Yeah.
And all they get is a bag of chips.
They're so weird, man. Their buying habits are so fucking strange. Like, yeah, some sodas here, a bag of chips there.
But yeah, we get briefly introduced to the shop owner, Mr. Fulton. And it's obvious that, well, it's also before they go in, Lisa has an interaction with like two little girls. So it's obvious that she knows some people in this town. But yeah, we briefly get introduced to Fulton, who tells Lisa that she's he's going to be up there the next day to go deep sea fishing with her dad.
Dang. Looking for that tilapia. and he also gives them a little warning that some punkers came through a little bit before them. They were pretty like rough and tumble, you know, like so he was like, be careful then. And you know, they are pretty rough and tumble.
There's like eight of them.
Yeah, all crammed into that VW bus. But it's like right after this, you kind of have a scene featuring the punkers where they're like,
yep.
You know, again, like we were sort of you were mentioning, like not all of them even get names, but there's there's Scratch.
He's the leader. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the leader with the blonde hair.
Shelly. I think Shelly gets name mentioned, like his girlfriend. Jim and Donna get name mentioned, but I don't think any of the other four do. I could be wrong. But I was like throughout the movie just like waiting for these people to get their names mentioned, and they don't. But yeah, Scratch is like a fucking, to me, looked like a Billy Idol fucking ripoff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And he's like super hyped. Like he's just like everything. Like I was so annoying because every like line he delivers, he's like yelling it, and you're just like, oh my god, did we fucking get it? Like,
yeah, he's way too aggressive.
Yeah. But you have some banter happening, and you learn in this scene, don't you, that they had previously killed some people
We learned that they're like go around like robbing houses, and that one of the last ones went bad or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
We also learned that they're targeting Orville's house, and that they're under the belief that he has a big stash of either dope or money.
So either gonna be some money or some dope. And this, like, they're one of their whole schemes. I mean I don't even know what the point of it was really, but they like pretend they're like pulled off on the side of the road pretending like their car is broken down, and they try and like flag down Lisa and Kathy as they're driving by after like previously trying to run them off the road,
right? yeah
and then they like proceed to just sort of like at one point they were like climbing all over their car and shit. Like it was they like circled them up and they were like staring down. It was really fucking weird. I was like, what do they think is gonna come from this?
And Scratch again gets really aggressive. He's like, open the fucking door or I will. Why would you think that these people that you were just like super aggressive to are going to drive by and help you?
Yeah, it was just crazy. I was like, this movie's already baffling me in many ways.
Long story short, the girls, you know, deny their request for assistance and just drive off and leave them in the dust.
Oh, yeah. eat my dust. And then you know, you kind of follow up with them arriving at the family cabin. They're bringing their stuff in. They're greeted by their by Lisa's ma.
She's another character that doesn't like get a name. You know what I mean? Like, why is her dad's character get a name, but not her? She's just Lisa's mom.
Yeah, which is crazy because like she's in a handful of pivotal scenes, and so.
Absolutely.
Might as fucking well. Like, okay, Claire. Her name's Claire. There you go. So hard? I'm just joking. I was just throwing a name out there. Like, that's all you had to do, you know?
Right.
So they, you know, they bring their bags in and stuff, and they're starting to get a little settled in. Lisa, I think, goes off to take a shower or whatever,
real quick, before that happens, we have a quick, like, Lisa and her mom are talking, and we learn that the next morning that her uncle Rod is going to be arriving. And then Lisa also asks her mom how Patrick is doing. And Lisa's mom tells her that he has his good days and his bad days. And you're sort of like, huh? Like, who's Patrick?
Well, exactly. And you're just like, you just assume maybe like that's a... somebody you'll get, you know, a family member or whatever that you'll get introduced to.
Right.
Only sort of. Yeah. And then it's like that, like, okay. So yeah, like I said, Lisa kind of goes to the take a shower. Kathy's just kind of resting in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this, like, you know, intermittent shots of somebody creeping around
the
house as she's
heavy
resting.
Breathing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, there's some heavy breathing. And eventually, you know, the doorknob starts rattling like somebody's turning it. And in pops this, you know, this monster.
Like sea monster.
Yeah. And just, you know, like screeching at Kathy. And Kathy's freaking out and screaming. And... just in time for Lisa to pop out of the bathroom and be like, Dad!
You know?
You wacky and wild guy, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Which is
fucking ridiculous.
It is a little over the top, I would say. Because it seems like the family has not met Kathy before.
No, nope, nope.
So this is like a hard check.
Yeah, what an introduction. Yeah. Well, for me too, like, sometimes stupid things in movies piss me off, but this guy is supposed to be a special effects creator, and he has this like cheap looking plastic fake ass fucking like sea creature mask. Like, you couldn't have done better than that.
Yeah, and like a bunch of like fake looking like seaweed and stuff dangling around him. It was not a good costume.
No, not at all. But yeah, you know, we're obviously, he likes to pull pranks, and yeah,
he's a prankster.
Yeah, she apologizes for her father's behavior, and then we learn that it's dinner time. So,
hell yeah, that's right. Dinner time. It's Perkins time.
Yeah, I don't know what they were having for dinner, but you know, there's really not much to know, basically. Orville, you know, gives Kathy shit for her smoking, her cigarette habit. And then Kathy tells Orville that she wants to see his den, like his room full of, you know, effects or masks that he has made. So they go into his den while off screen, Lisa and her mom clean up after dinner.
Yeah, that's right. In the den, there's like you said, like a hodgepodge of like memorabilia and like special effects and stuff from some of his movies, presumably. But like, yeah. I can't exactly remember.
He name drops one of them. Real quick too, at dinner they also talk about Uncle Rod is brought up again, and we learn that he's a plastic surgeon. And one of the movies he name drops is Oriental Nights.
I wonder what that movie is about.
Yeah, no shit.
But like, what's the conversation that they have? Like, cause I remember, I can't remember exactly, but I just remember it was kind of like a weird vibe from it.
Yeah. Cause she, it was basically about like being able to tell the difference between what is real and what is not. Yeah. But yeah, he randomly starts singing row, row, row your boat. And it just made me think of your creepy fucking story from working at that, retirement home.
Oh, yeah, the girl, like, playing in the hallway. Dude.
Yeah, and the guy that would always sing, like, hum, row your boat.
Yeah. I mean, like, that was a weird... Yeah. That kind of stuff still gives me the weebies and the jeebies.
But, yeah, they just... they're basically having a conversation about what is real or not, which leads Orville to show her this, like, really shitty... home movie he made of Lisa's mom like doing something in the kitchen, and then this like overweight man busts in, kind of looks like the best way I would describe it is like a creepy like lumberjack comes in to attack her and then peels off his mask and they start laughing, oh honey I love you, and then we learn it's like a home video. Yeah, it was really weird.
It was really strange. And like, there's some of this stuff that I just don't understand, like where they were going with it. I mean, I guess with this, it's like, because there's no like definitive cut between like their conversation and the home movie per se. It just shows you the home movie.
Right.
They're still doing that movie in a movie thing. I guess that's it.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. I just, it's weird, and like so far in the into the movie, you're just like, I don't really care about anybody.
No, not at all.
You know what I mean? So yeah, that happens, and they, you know, then they kind of, it's like bedtime, everybody's unwinding, it's night. Girls are in bed.
Yep. Orville decides to watch the 11 o'clock news, and
you see somebody kind of like walking around outside.
Yeah, you get like, you know, it'll show what some of the characters are doing inside, and then you'll get a shot of this person like slinking around outside, trying to open a window, trying to open a door, and then they eventually start climbing up like a ladder that's on the house.
Never leave a ladder on the side of your house, you know. Number one rule, don't give these people a way to get in. I'd say, lock your doors after you take down your ladders. It's that important.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird. Like, I wonder why there was a ladder on the house. It's kind of weird.
They're just like, they're making this movie. They're like, oh, they got to get in somehow. just put a ladder on the side of the fucking house. Orville was replacing shingles earlier. We just didn't put it in the movie.
That's a possibility. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. You know, at one point it jumps back to the girls and like, you know, during this whole thing, and like there's like,
oh, yeah,
know, dad's one last joke for the night was like a fake severed arm in the bed or whatever.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Yeah, we get it, he's pranky.
Yeah, it's kind of overkill, and it's also like very clearly just a fake rubber hand, so anyone would know that was, you know, it's not real.
Yeah,
but I guess if you're like half tired and, but yeah,
full of butterball turkey, you know, you're you might not be thinking straight.
Yeah, dad's last prank for the night, like you said.
There does seem to be like a bit of a thunderstorm going on,
brewing. Yeah.
So that's kind of all making for an interesting setting, but. You have the shot of the two girls, they're asleep, or they're, you know, on the way to being asleep, laying in the dark, we'll say. And at one point, Kathy, you know, reaches over to, I believe, turn the lamp on.
Yep.
And that's when what you think, this was actually kind of clever, what you think as a viewer is the fake severed arm actually is somebody else's arm. And it just, and like, you know, when she reaches for the lamp, the arm like raises up and grabs her. And
yep.
It was a clever moment. I'll give it that.
Well, it's also like there's been so many pranks that up until you realize who it is, you think that maybe this is another prank.
True.
But very quickly, Scratch puts his hand over her mouth, and we realize that, you know, this is now a pretty dire situation, because Scratch, you know, leads them downstairs, and now we're in a situation where all four of these people at the house are being, you know, circled and round up in the living room by these eight fucking punks who just broke into their fucking house. So it's not really a good situation to be in.
No, not at all. They, like you said, they bring the two girls down. The mom's already in the room. Orville's already tied the fuck up to a chair. And they're like fucking with them, you know, because they're like, where's, you know, tell us where the money's stashed and shit. At one point, one of the ladies, I can't remember if it's Shelly or not, like, has this really weird moment where she's like he looks like a Santa, and she's basically like, I've always wanted to like fuck a Santa or something, and like gets kind of like weird on him. And then
that wasn't Shelly, but yeah, she gets like turned on by like the situation that's at play.
It's one of the punk rock girls, but it was so weird, and you're just like, this is all happening so fast, like. But needless to say, Orville is not like telling them anything, you know. He's sort of like, I don't know what you think is fucking here.
Yep.
You know, you have this the one thing that you do during this whole sequence, you see this shot from like, I don't know, behind a bookcase or wherever the fuck it is. But yeah, it's like this person like peering through this like glass, and it's like, and they're in like an all red room or something. It's like, when first watching this movie, you're just like, what the fuck is that?
Absolutely. Cause you just see like, you see their eyes, but you also see that like their skin around their eyes, like, looks disfigured, and it is kind of super random. You're like, what the fuck? But yeah, the situation kind of escalates pretty fucking quickly, because you know, they're you know, trying to get Orville to tell them where this, you know, where the goods are, and he's not playing along. And eventually one of the girls just picks up a fucking log and just bludgeons him to death.
That was surprising to me, honestly.
Yeah, it was.
Like, I was like, whoa, they just took out that guy that quick? Like,
good point.
But yeah, like, she does, like, you know, like she, like you said, she bludgeons him to death. And then like, they, you know, pretty quickly, like, immediately turn to the rest of the family. They turn to the mom in particular. You know, being like, you know, same thing. Like, where the fuck is the stash, you know?
Yeah, give me, you know, tell us where it is or more people are going to die. You know what I mean?
And they end up dragging the mom out of the room.
Because Scratch does say something interesting where he says, we heard he has a big secret up here. And, you know, we obviously learn here shortly what that secret actually is. But he thinks that it's like a stash of diamonds or cash or dope. And, you know, Lisa's mom once again is like, you know, there's nothing, you know, there's no money. And that's like you said, when they lead her mom away, and Scratch says, basically tells her that, you know, we're going to take you on a tour of the house, and maybe you'll remember where the stash is hidden.
Yeah. So it's definitely not good, because the two girls are still there. Like, this is, you know, Stash like backhanded Lisa at one point during this whole sequence. And then like, you know, after they exit with the mom, like, two of the members of the gang are like, is that Jim and what's her face? Or
Jim's the one that's like super fucking annoying. He's got that really, really annoying laugh that like, he just continues to do it throughout the course of the movie, and it just is like nails on a chalkboard. But yeah, he like mocks Orville's dead body. You know, give me five. I can't even do the laugh. Dude. Like, it's so much more annoying than that. Like, it is excruciatingly annoying.
But then he tries to, like, kiss Kathy.
Yeah.
And
then, she bites his lip.
Yeah, and then, like, kind of makes a run for it. Yeah. Kind of creating a commotion that, like, everybody ends up running out of the room, basically.
Yeah, it allows Lisa to run upstairs.
Good on Kathy for you know, fighting back.
Yeah, we also get a scene where Scratch and Shelly are talking about, not only do they talk about killing the whole family, but Scratch tells her that, you know, you're the only one I trust, and that after we find the stash, it will just be us two. And Shelly tells Scratch that she will take care of business, and the two share a kiss before we follow up with what Kathy's doing.
So they got their own thing going on.
It seems like it.
Yeah, they're all on the edge, but they're over the edge, man.
I guess so.
Yeah, so Kathy ends up, like, running out to, like,
it's like another...
Yeah, it's like another part of the house, but it's, yeah, like, but it's like detached.
Yeah, yeah. Essentially.
And, you know, she's, like, trying to find a place to hide in there and stuff. And that's... Doesn't she run... That's the mom's in there, though, isn't she?
Yes. 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 She finds Lisa's mom's dead body sitting in a chair.
Didn't take long.
Which should be a shitty fucking thing to stumble upon.
Yeah, exactly. But quickly, fairly quickly, Jim has followed her to this area. And continues, once inside, continues to try and assault her.
Yep.
But what happens, like, starts, to old, like, Jimbo?
He starts ripping her clothes off. And before he can really take it any further, one of the female punks comes in. I actually kind of like this scene. She comes in and she basically, you know, uses her big dick energy to run him out of there. And is like, you know, like, this one's mine, essentially. And she actually pulls a knife on him, too.
She walked in and cock slaps Jim out of the room.
Basically. Like, she even pulls a knife on him. He relents. You know, she starts to console Kathy. But then, you know, just, you know, maybe Kathy's thinking, like, oh, this is a female. Like, thank you. You just saved me from getting, you know, physically assaulted, sexually assaulted. But then Kathy, real quickly, you know, maybe it's a switchblade. Maybe it's a knife, whatever. Just pulls out this blade and stabs Kathy, you know, multiple times in the lower waist. And see you later, Kathy.
I thought you were going to do it again there for a second.
I'll pull out my blade. And I can't resist. Dude, right. I still feel like we need to do, like, a reunion songs at some point.
You know, I think most of the boys would be up for it. It's just finding a way to coordinate something like that. It's going to be damn tough. I mean, we still got a couple of things that next time you're over, we're going to have to follow up on. Like, that track we were jamming on while you were here last time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I want to actually try to record something on that. So
absolutely.
Yeah. We'll get something.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that trip. So, yeah, I want to do that, too. So. But anyway,
but yeah, it was like you said, it was kind of a cool moment at first, because it was like, okay, cool, she's not gonna let her get raped, and then like immediately turns around and stabs her. He's like, fuck. I didn't expect Kathy not to die.
right.
But doesn't Jim run? You know, is back in the main part of the house at this point. Lisa.
Yeah, continue.
I was gonna say Lisa's been caught.
Yep.
And like brought back downstairs. All the punk rockers are there, basically. And they kind of let her know, you know, like, that she's the only one left. You know, Kathy, your mom, your dad, they're all fucking dead.
Yeah, because she asks where Kathy and her mom are, and one of them tells her they're with your father. Yeah. That's fucked up.
Dude, right?
You know, and they all, once again, continue.
Oh, they're just so fucking like annoying, man. They're all like, the party's over and like stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, they're trying to be like edgy, but they're
not. They just you know, they keep prying though. They're like,
but yeah, at this point, like,
where's the stash?
Right. Yeah, they bring up once again, like, we know there's a secret up here, you know what I mean? And that's when Scratch eventually like tells everyone, you know, like, well, let's go search, like, let's start tearing the fucking house apart. This is where Shelly and Scratch have like a brief argument over who is going to have Lisa, which allows Lisa to run free for a brief period of time. But then what happens?
I can't, like, does she get shoved or does she just jump or
what? I forget. I think it was like in the commotion, like she gets like pushed backwards, maybe.
Yeah, it was something really funny. But like, so we'll say that, like, she kind of gets shoved a little bit backwards and ends up going like flying through this fucking window.
Whew, yeah.
You know, lands outside.
It's like a second story window, too.
Yeah, it was wild. Like, she just gets right up and then just starts hauling ass away from the house in the snow and all this stuff, you know, the night.
There is a punk that's in hot pursuit, but
yeah,
she is able to get away for the time being, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's like anytime that happens in a movie.
Barely. Right.
But yeah, anytime that happens in a movie, like a character takes a tumble through a window, it's always pretty good.
Oh god, yeah, dude. Especially when they do like what they did with this, where they kind of slow it down. Yeah, so yep. It's like flying out the window. Just ridiculous.
So at this point, like, it seems like there's different groups of punks that are, you know, searching around the house. We end up following, we go with Jim and Donna for a moment, who are in a room, and at one point it almost looks like Jim is like assaulting his female punk too, but it seems that she likes it. Like, he pins her to the ground and starts kissing her. And it cuts away from them, you know, but eventually they start fucking in the prop room.
Yeah.
And you know, we get a shot like of you know, Lisa running through the snow, the punk like following her tracks. But one of the craziest parts of this movie is that while they're fucking, there's like a scene where they're like near the end, she puts a mask on. That's a fucking Silver Shamrock mask from Halloween 3.
Oh my god, dude.
That's the Skull Silver Shamrock mask from Halloween 3.
Whoa. I didn't even think about that. That's such a good catch, man.
Like, I'm wondering how they were able to, like, that's the movie part of the movie that like shocks me the most, baffles me the most, like
how they get their paws on that.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah. That's wild. That's super cool though. That's a super absolutely cool link.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they finish having sex and, you know, cuz she's straddling him, so his eyes are closed, and then, you know, I think it would momentarily like spook anybody, but you open your eyes and this person that's straddling you has a mask on. But yeah. She mentions that that was probably the craziest orgasm you've ever had. But then dude, Eric,
that'd be fun.
What does Eric find? Eric is the punk that's played by Robert Zadar. He's paired off with another female punk, and what do they stumble upon?
Yeah, he's like picking through a bookshelf and he notices something behind it. So, you know, he goes to move the bookshelf and it just swings right out.
Yeah.
And they find a fucking door back there.
Crazy.
And, yeah, which as, you know, somebody, I mean, I get that they're looking for a stash and stuff, but that would like spook the hell out of me.
Yeah.
But they seem to just go right in. And yep. In
no
there,
hesitation.
There's like, you know, like living, like it's like a living situation, right?
Yeah.
It's all in like green and red lighting, which I thought was strange. That drive me a little nuts. But very quickly after entering the room, this person just comes running, like just running at them, taking out Eric. And
like, like Andre the Giant fucking bear hug gone wrong.
He does it. He grabs him. Oh my god. And at one point he has a sweet like karate-esque move where like Eric throws a punch and he like blocks it and like pops his arm off. And the dude's like but yeah, he basically squeezes Eric to death, like presumably like snapping his spine or something.
And
like,
Eric was a big dude too.
Yeah. And then he turns onto the female punker who remains unnamed in this scene. And you have like really quick shots of the facial features on this character, and they're obviously like deformed, and
yeah, like a piece of it's like his cheek is like hanging off.
It's weird. It's a weird design. He's also wearing basically just like a mechanic's jumpsuit.
Yep.
And he keeps yelling like. He can barely talk, but you can make out things like he says like "papa" and stuff like that, because that's I guess when he notices that his fucking
because he brutally very quickly snaps the other girl's neck,
yeah,
like almost like turning her head around, and then yeah, he in a very and we learn more about his situation later, but yeah, he comes across. Orville's dead body and Papa, and then just like lets out this like horrific like cry / wail, like,
oh yeah, dude, it's so strange, this character.
It is
And yeah, so like all the punkers start running for the fucking hills, and yeah, at one point
upon the sight of him, they just fucking, rightfully so, they flee.
Yeah. Well, one of them gets caught up, though. Like, she somehow gets
separated.
Gets behind, separated, and this character who...
Oh, this is a fantastic...
Oh, yeah, dude, where he picks her up. I thought there was going to be some sort of wrestling move. I mean, it was kind of...
It kind of was.
Like, slamming somebody into the turnbuckle or something, but... he picks her up and, like, bashes her against this tree... presumably probably like breaking her back or something.
Yeah.
Like we said, the other punkers are just like booking it the hell out of there at that point.
Yeah.
You have some shots from there of like one, Lisa's still running, and and then you see like the other four remaining, or I think there's four remaining punkers.
Yeah.
Just running off into the woods in the night. It would suck, dude, because it's like, there's like snow everywhere.
Falling.
You can see how cold out it is because you can see their breath and shit. Like, oof.
Yeah, it's not an optimal situation. and it becomes even less optimal when Scratch gets the bright idea that they should split up into groups. So Scratch and Shelly head in one direction and Jim and Donna head in the other. I feel like if I was in that situation and this freak of a man, just murdered three of my friends, the last thing I would do is split into groups.
Yeah, at the very least, I'd think maybe the four of us could overpower this goon if he runs up on us,
Right. Like, it was just in classic, like a classic horror trope, like it was just such a baffling move.
Yeah. So you have this one shot where you find out that Scratch and Shelly are both armed. Shelly pulls out that fucking knife that's like, it's like huge. It's such a big blade. It might as well be Sting from The Hobbit. but she like pulls out that knife. Scratch pulls out this pistol that he says he found back at the house. And then you jump to what Jim and Donna are doing,
mm-hmm.
And like somehow they've like already found like a fucking cave and shelter and like have started a fire.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. It was wild. I think it was surprisingly though, it was a somewhat smart move, like try to warm up a little bit, like catch your breath for a minute. But yeah, you're like, where the fuck was this? Yeah. You know, like how did they start up? How did they start a fire?
This is crazy, a bit crazy, but you know, they kind of have a back and forth, which doesn't really go too well. You know, she thinks he's an asshole.
Or makes sense. Like, they just fucked, and now they're, like, it was so stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, like, exactly. Like, they just fucked. She's like, you're, you know, like I said, she's, like, calling him an asshole. He's just like, and he's being an asshole. He's just sort of like, you just think all you need to do is shake your ass in the world to, like, you know, work out or whatever. And it's like, bro.
He's also, like, over like anything he does now and anything he's saying, he has that fucking laugh. Like,
oh god, dude. Yeah,
it is so obnoxious, but you know.
Yeah,
I can't even replicate it. Like, it's so there's been other movies where there's been like a similar situation, but he just way overdoes it to the point where it is just more than obnoxious. Like, it is grating, like I said. But yeah, he gets up and tells her that he is going to get as far from her as he can, does his annoying laugh again, and what does he turn around into?
Oh, dude, he basically gets a mandible claw right to the... He just turns around. Right into this fucking deformed dude's fucking palm.
And he just
grabs him by the face and just takes him the fuck out, like, no, like, so quick.
Yeah, just like crushes his face. You know, dude, I think it could have been a little bit more gruesome, but
I think, yeah, I think that's something that this movie distinctly lacked. It's like, there could have been, there's plenty of opportunities for a little more gruesomeness.
Yeah, there was not enough gore or blood.
So Jim gets taken out, and then this, I mean, and at this point in the movie, you still don't have a name for this person.
Right. Well, you can assume. Yeah. I mean,
I mean, they did mention it earlier. And so you learned that this person, the deformed individual is named Patrick.
Right.
Right. And so then Patrick turns and, you know, sees Donna. Kind of goes into the cave a little further. Donna, from what I can tell, tries to use her feminine wiles to maybe like calm the situation down so she doesn't get killed.
Right.
But the question is, does it work?
Nah, it does not. Nah. Yeah, she also, it's real weird. Like, for some reason, he says something about Santa Claus. And then she's like, oh, you like Santa Claus? And that's when she, like, touches his face. He touches her face, and they embrace. And like you said, I think she was trying to use her feminine wiles to escape the situation. But I don't know if he, like, used his hand to, like, rip through her stomach. Because you don't see, like, you just hear this sound of, like, a bone snapping.
Yeah, exactly.
And the next thing you know, she's sort of like, you know, is like breathing her last breath and is dead. So you don't see it. It's like from the waist area, but I don't know if he like had a blade or if he just used his hand or what.
That's, again, like a perfectly missed opportunity for something, you know?
Absolutely.
But yeah, so those two get taken out and
they're done for.
And then, you know, you kind of follow up. It's like morning, right? Lisa's still on the run.
Yo, she would... these characters would probably have hypothermia by now.
Oh, absolutely, dude. It's like if you left, like, the running through that cabin in the snow at, like, 2 in the morning. Next thing you know, we're seeing Lisa. It's probably, like, 8. She's still hoofing it through the fucking woods. There's no way, dude.
Like, there's no way. And just a nightgown? Like, yeah, there's no way.
Yeah. But that punk rocker, who I don't think is named.
Nope.
is like right still like pretty close behind
absolutely
Lisa, and so you know she continues the run. You pick back up with Scratch and Shelly.
Yep.
And you know they're
oh my god
just fucking arguing. There's such a
there's such a cringeworthy quote here.
What is what
because yeah they argue, you know, he talks about how you know we have two options here, like you know, we can either run down the mountain or we can retrace our steps back to the house. And this is where Shelly brings up Patrick and, you know, what about that freak? And Scratch goes, well, if he's a freak, what does that make us?
Oh.
Like, I think they were like, thought like, oh man, this is such a great line of dialogue. Like, you know,
what does that make us?
Oh my god, it was terrible.
So edgy.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, I would probably just keep trying to run down the mountain.
Yeah. I'd get the fuck out of there. What the fuck?
Yeah, dude.
Go find somewhere warm. Like,
I mean, so, you know, you kind of, so they keep on, they keep moving. This is when you pick back up with, the unknown punk rocker,
right?
And he wait, okay, I have the subtitles on.
Oh shit.
And okay. it just said the name of that character.
What is it?
Earbox.
Earbox.
Yeah, it literally
what
said
the fuck. Weird, what the hell, that's like his punk name or something. Hmm.
And your punk well, name one shall be Earbox.
Earbox. Well, because, you know, that's not even like a name listed in the cast. Like, there's a Gibbs, a Blaine, a Bell, a Patrick, a Melinda, a Pete. But there's no one named Earbox. Like, what the fuck?
That's so weird, man. Anyway, so
we got Earbox here. Okay.
Yeah, we got Earbox on the line.
Earbox.
Yeah. Earbox.
Earbox.
Yo, crank it up. Or crank it up. We got Earbox.
We got ear. And then we're going to store books.
Yeah. Me and my boy Earbox are going to go get some store books.
Classic. Dude. Okay, so what does Earbox do?
So Earbox catches up with Lisa and basically, you know, tries to fucking kill her.
Right, right.
Luckily though, the grotesque Patrick shows up.
Yeah. Good and just timing.
Just thrashes that motherfucker. So another punk rocker bites the dust.
Yep.
And but you know, Patrick does not kill Lisa, but Lisa does look like she is severely frostbitten now.
Yeah, because he like checks on her like, and must, you know, he must think that she's dead, so he just sort of, you know, leaves the scene. And then next thing we know, because like we mentioned earlier, when they stopped by that shop earlier, Fulton told the girls that he would be up there the next day. So next thing we know is we got shots of Fulton driving along. And then we also get like shown these different shots of like, and it happens a couple times, like of all the dead bodies in the house. Like it'll have a shot of Orville and then a shot of Kathy and the shot of Lisa's mom. And Lisa's mom is probably the, like, probably the goriest shots of the movie are their dead bodies. And it looks like Lisa's mom is the best because it looks like there's like maybe a bone from her neck protruding or something.
Yeah.
There's, you know, so there's at least a tad bit of some practical, you know, gore effects, but it's very, very brief. But like I said, it shows him driving, it shows him arriving and walking to the house, and why it does this, it showed like three or four different times, like, you know, all the aftermath that's happened around the house. And Fulton, you know, finally makes it, like walks the whole winding path to the house. As he comes across the front door, he notices like, you know, the the drapes from the window that's broken. He enters the house and you hear him say, "Oh my God." And naturally now the house, you know, there's paramedics there, there's police there. And then who else arrives at the scene?
I guess I'm pulling the blank here.
Uncle Rod.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Fucking Rod shows up. Rod is like, you know, he's pretty frantic because obviously his family's dead. So, he kind of like runs up on the scene. The character.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you wouldn't know, like, you're just getting there. And obviously, if you're paramedics and police, they're like, something not favorable is happening. So, yeah, that'd be a shitty situation to roll up on.
Yeah. But, you know, he gets in, like, he kind of gets in there and he's talking to Fulton, he's talking to the sheriff, and they're, you know, trying to just figure out what the fuck happened there.
Right.
You know, he mentions that, you know, basically close family was up here. It doesn't make sense.
Yep.
They're all just, you know, yeah. It it would be like a strange situation because there's no survivors on premises, right?
And so, right. Like, there's some punkers there. The family's there. Like, it would totally be like a what the fuck happened here situation.
Yeah.
But they obviously do mention that, you know, there doesn't seem to be, like, where's Lisa?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And so that's when the sheriff decides to form a posse, which I just don't know if that's like, I don't know if I, forming a posse sounds very like you're gonna chase somebody down, not just look for them. But anyway,
yeah, continue.
Oh, I was gonna say this whole sequence kind of gave me what was the movie?
Dark Knight of the Scarecrow.
Yeah, Dark Knight of the Scarecrow vibes.
Okay.
So you know. Well,
yeah, I could see that.
Well, just because you know,
it looks like a bunch of good old boys. You know what I mean?
yeah, exactly. It's like a bunch of good old boy town folk, and their dogs are like out in the woods. They're trying to find Lisa. You know.
Yeah, Rod and Fulton are there too.
Armed to the fucking teeth, everybody and their fucking dog has a goddamn shotgun. It seems.
I feel like this scene like runs on for way too far. Like they could have like so easily skimmed and cut this down, and it just drags the fuck on.
Yeah, it was like that Ninja 3 police chase scene where the ninja's escaping the police, but it doesn't have any of the thrilling action and adventure.
Right, because at least that scene had a bunch of over-the-top fucking deaths like a ninja using like a bamboo. Oh my God, that movie was incredible, dude.
Yeah, I mean that ninja took down like 30 fucking cops at least.
Anyway. I'd be interested to see the rest of the movies in that franchise.
We should try and do that sometime.
Try to track them down, but yeah, this scene just runs on because obviously while they're searching, we also get shots of Scratch and Shelly running through the woods. Yeah. You know, we see Patrick's hiding behind a tree. He spots the two and starts following them. And eventually, you know, because the group, like, the posse, like, splits into two. So one of the group comes across Lisa's body, and we learn that she's still alive after one of the police checks her pulse. But then we go back to what's going on with the other three that are running through the woods, and Patrick seems to have caught up with them and attacks, but Scratch gets the upper hand and fires off, you know, a handful of shots into Patrick, causing him to fall and presumably die.
Yeah. It's pretty intense, like, this, you know, this whole sequence. So, like you said, he fires off a bunch of rounds, but Patrick doesn't die.
Right.
Not because of that, at least, you know.
Right.
You know, he springs back to life and like kind of attacks again.
Yep.
And this is when like the whole rest of that posse sort of descends upon the scene.
Right, because they were obviously were alerted to that by the sound of the handgun going off, you know, so yeah. They head in that direction.
But this is where what I mean, though, where it's like, you know, fucking Fulton sees what's going on, runs out into the fucking mix, and he's shouting, "Don't shoot him, don't shoot
Rodas,
him.
Rodas.
Rodas, excuse me. And, like... they basically, and you know, they from what it looks like this deranged individual is attacking these two punk rockers.
Yeah.
So you know, he's trying to get them to not shoot Patrick, but then blammo. And this is probably the most gruesome shot in the movie, if you ask me, is his fucking face. They shoot, like, he gets shot straight in the fucking face and just blows open half of his, the side of his face. It's
absolutely
ridiculous. But that's the other thing, though. At this point in time, you'd have no idea why Rod is, like, running up and yelling, "Don't shoot him.
Like, don't kill this deranged fucking looking freak." Yeah.
Yeah. You have no clue why that happens.
Right. And naturally, if you were police and you stumbled across this scene, obviously your first, you know, instinct is going to be to fucking open fire on this guy. So
yeah, it looks like somebody's attacking these people. Yeah.
Yes.
But, you know, Scratch really fucking, the aftermath of all this, he really fucking hams it up.
Oh, like, dude, an Emmy performance.
Yeah. It was fucking ridiculous, you know, like just trying to come off as innocent as fucking possible, victimized as possible.
He came along, we stopped at the house looking for help, and all of a sudden this guy came along and just started killing everybody. Yeah.
Yeah, buddy.
He puts on a performance for the ages.
Yeah. But... then you kind of go, you know, you walk away from this scene to the hospital where you see Lisa in a, you know, lying in the hospital bed, you know, hooked up to a bunch of the machines, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And the sheriff's there, his, I don't know, deputy or whatever the fuck is there. But is it Rod that's there too right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so. Yeah, they're basically just discussing with the doctor, you know, like, what's the prognosis, doctor? And he's like, well, she's got a 50-50 shot, you know, shot of surviving.
Yeah, we learned that she's developed a blood clot and that she can't be moved and that, yeah, she has a 50-50 chance, you know, if when they perform the surgery. So...
dang.
Yeah, not a very good situation to be in.
No, definitely not. But you know, it also could be a good situation. That's the 50-50, good or bad.
True. True, but yeah, it's just a very, you know, you're led to believe that, like, you know, her chances of surviving aren't very good, essentially. So yeah,
exactly. They because, you know, clearly she could identify the situation.
Yep.
And so
yep.
It's like, you know, you're really resting on whether she'll survive or not. So it builds some tension. But then you kind of go back, you go to the sheriff's office, right? Where where the two officers are like, they're interrogating Scratch.
There's Bill. I forget the other one's name, but Bill is like the older one. And they kind of play, you know, good cop, bad cop, essentially, you know, because he's trying to get Scratch to tell his story again. You know, he's asked if, and Scratch is still trying to say, like, all that, you know, I had a, there's something wrong with, you know, my leaky radiator, and we went to the house for help, and this person came out and killed us. And Bill has this great line where he says, "The only leaky radiator I see is your story."
God, dude, yeah. I was like, good one, Bill. You got him with that zinger. Yeah, but it's he like Scratch's like main thing is that they went there to get some water to for the radiator, right?
Right, right.
And yeah, so he doesn't let up any good information. He wants his lawyer.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
And I will say this, these officers are not doing their civil duty. He asked for his lawyer, and Bill basically is like, I'll give you one when I want to fucking give you a lawyer.
Yeah.
He's like, whoa, dog.
Yeah. When he's not cooperating, you know, Bill is like, you know, all right, let's put him back in his cell. And as he's leading him away, he tells Scratch that Shelly, you know, already spilled the beans and said everything.
Classic so, tactic.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. 100%. And after they lead her away, this is when, you know, they talk about how they have nothing to hold them on, and that, you know, Lisa's the only eyewitness that we got. And then yeah. They bring Shelly in for questioning, too. And this is probably, you know, there's a lot of humor in the movie that I didn't really like, but I thought this was funny how they interrogate Shelly and they switch roles. And now Bill plays the good cop and the other...
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny too, honestly. And they even have like a quick little discussion about it where they're like, okay, this time you next time you play the bad cop, you're better at
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, and Shelly is like distinctly more scared at first, I'd say.
Yeah,
you know, she's like pretty worried, but and they keep, you know, kind of pressuring her to testify against Scratch.
Yep.
But well, eventually,
you know, we'll be lenient if you cooperate. He's already talked.
Yeah. But eventually, she kind of like sort of stands up for herself a little bit and is like, you know, also like, I want to get a lawyer. I'm not gonna. She doesn't seem like she's actually gonna talk.
Nope. She doesn't talk. Yep.
You know. So it doesn't really go anywhere.
Nope.
But
yeah, and that is like such a police tactic, like, you know, oh, you're, you know, your buddy over there, like, you guys are pretty good friends, huh? Okay, because yeah, he, you know, he's saying that, you know,
it's
you
did that, ratted you out.
That you mastermind and that you did, yeah, that's like basic 101, you know. Yeah,
exactly.
And it works, which is crazy.
No, they're fucking with you. Yeah, so, you know, it doesn't go anywhere interrogating those two. So you end up back at the hospital where Rod and the two officers are waiting to hear how the operation went with Lisa. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Rod's very agitated, as one would be if his whole family was fucking murdered.
Yeah, because we learned that, you know... The surgery was unsuccessful, and she did not make it through the surgery. And this is where,
again, just seems like such a wild thing that Linda Blair plays this character who the main bulk of what you see is her just like running through the woods for a little while in this movie, and then she's fucking dead.
Barely any dialogue, like no care. Yeah. I don't know.
I was so baffled by her, by that. Anyway,
it could have been anybody. Yeah.
It literally so kind random. Of just bugged me the entire time.
That's fair. But yeah, Rod's, you know, like basically like obviously upset. Like, what are you guys going to do about this? And, you know, they're like, well, you know, there's nothing we really can do. But to add sort of like, insult to injury, like in a sense they say, you know, but we need you to come with us because we actually have some questions for you. This is when, you know, they back at the station, you know, they question Rod about Patrick and why why Rod was like so upset and had so much grief for him when they shot him down. And this is where he tells the police that, you know, the family raised Patrick from a child, took him in and raised him with love and compassion, and that he's nothing but sweet and innocent. And then this is when the police tell Rod, you know, hey, we have nothing to hold them on. You know, in a court of law, you need proof, and we're going to be releasing them in 48 hours.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Rod has this, you know, line of like in disbelief, like their dead bodies aren't proof enough, you know.
Right.
Which.
But Rod has a. Oh, sorry. Continue.
I was just gonna say. I mean, like, I wouldn't even know how to properly react in that situation. Then, you know, too, and
right.
on top of it, learning that the people that you pretty much are sure were involved in their deaths are just gonna get let go. You're just like, what the fuck, man.
Yeah, I don't know how anyone could process that in a real life situation. But Rod, you know, as Rod is leaving, he, you know, sort of says some ominous things. You know, he as he's going out the door, he mentions that, you know, well, you guys might have to follow the law, but I don't, you know, essentially. And, you know, after he leaves, the other cop, you know, makes mention, like, you know, sounds like he might. What does he say? Basically says that, you know, he gets the feeling that he's going to take the law into his own hands, and Bill's like, frankly, I don't give a shit, or something like that. I forget what he says.
It's like a parody on like that famous movie line. He's like, frankly, Blaine, I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then you jump to like, the funeral, basically, like letting out at the church, at the local church, mm-hmm. or whatever,
right?
And you know, I can't remember who goes up to like shake Rod's hand, but you could tell just like how almost like not there Rod is. Yeah. You know,
yeah, his mind is elsewhere for sure. Yeah.
And then this leads him to, and this is where like the movie just continues to kind of get baffling, and like as we go, you know, like I thought it was crazy that like how early on you saw Patrick and like how all that really unfolded so fast, and then, you know, you jump from that to like this sequence where Rod then is now, he like goes to like a medical supply place and asks for two surgical tables, and you're just like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you just, you know, he's like, it's just all, I don't know, it's just all kind of baffling. So yeah, he goes and tries to pick up two surgical tables, and then where does like, what, he goes to like some like back alley,
yeah,
like place, like what is he doing there though? I can't remember exactly.
He goes and we learned what it is, you know, in the next scene, but he goes and procures something that is like wrapped up in paper, like, you know, looks like maybe a weapon of some sort. We learned, like I said, we're gonna learn here in a second what it is. It's a shotgun. He goes and gets a shotgun.
Yeah, and that's like, right. That's right, because the guy makes the joke that he picks it up from. He's like, "You can always fix the nose," which
it's like
the, you know, sawed off, you know.
Payment for the because then Broad's a plastic surgeon, so because the guy's like, because Rod's like, you know, how. Like, thanks, man. Like, how could I pay you back? And the guy's like, yeah.
Always fix the nose.
But yeah, you're kind of like, what is, you know, is he about to, like, take matters into his own hand? You know what I mean?
Homie's gearing up like the fucking Punisher over here.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
Yeah. And then, you know, so you get, like, a shot of Scratch and Shelly. They're, like, you know, trying to make some phone calls, trying to figure out how to get the fuck, you know, who to pick them up or how to get the fuck out of there, basically, because they're getting let go.
You know what's interesting to me is like, you know, only like a couple of the punks that are with them get named. Mm-hmm. The mom doesn't get named, but the person that they call on the phone to pick them up randomly gets a name.
Ernie.
Hey, Ernie. You know, like what?
That's what I mean, dude.
Why does this like inconsequential character that's just like a brief phone call in the movie, why does he get a name?
Yeah. That's so
fuck.
Oh my God.
But yeah, we learned that this person, Ernie, that's going to pick them up, you know, is going to take like, it's like 20 or 30 minutes to pick them up or whatever. So, you know, they head outside to wait. And as they head outside, we also see Rod in the parking lot in a black car. And in a very gutsy, ballsy move, right in front of the police station, rolls up to them, pulls out a shotgun, and tells them to get in the back or I'll blow your fucking head off.
Dude, I know. That's what I thought too. I was like, this is right, like literally right out front of the fucking police station.
Jesus Christ, yeah.
God does not give a fuck anymore.
Yeah, I guess at that point, you, yeah, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to carry this out, like, yeah, whatever, and, fuck it.
And so you quickly follow up with that, where he drives them out to the family fucking home, shoves them inside, and brings them down the hallway to this fucking room where he has set up two surgical tables.
Yeah.
And that's when you're just like, oh fuck, dude. Like, is he's gonna fuck them up. Like, he ain't just gonna just shoot them, man.
Yeah.
He straps them down, right? Like,
he orders Scratch to strap Shelly down, which would be a fucked situation, and then gets strapped down himself. And then we get like totally out of left field, like wild card reveal.
Yeah,
you know, dude, what I mean?
He's like, he starts peeling off his fucking face and starts explaining how he's also deformed, and his brother Orville, who's super good at special effects, made him this mask that he can wear and be in public with. And
it's fucking ridiculous.
It's
absurd,
man. Like, I was like, what?
No way. Yeah. It's,
like, just let him just let him get some revenge. Why does this layer have to be here? And he, you know, he pulls off his face, and he's got like some, you know, fucked up elements of his face and all that.
Yeah, yeah. But, so,
and he, you know, it's like, I don't know if they're trying to make some commentary on society or whatever, but he's like, society won't accept ugliness.
Yeah. Yeah, we also learn that Patrick's his son, and that, you know, he couldn't raise him, and he's very grateful that Orville did. But yeah, it's just like, you mean to tell me that this, it's fucking ridiculous.
I was just blown away by it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so again, like, you know, you sort of think like, you know, obviously he's gonna fuck them up. Like, Shelly, at one point, he like starts like, strength, like choking her out, but he doesn't actually like kill her. There's lots of screaming and shouting as they realize that they're
just
about
cuts
to
away.
Get fucked up. And yeah, dude, it cuts away. It cuts away to like this really comical almost like moment.
Yeah,
which like again, you could have just thrown in a little bit of brutality in that last sequence, right?
Yeah,
some sort of blood splatter. But yeah, it just cuts away to like to Rod, like, you know, sitting legs crossed, smoking a tobacco pipe and drinking and reading the newspaper.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
And it kind of pans up, and you see in that room behind the shelf with that little window, you see Scratch and Shelly basically just in there screaming because, you know, they explain that the room's soundproof.
Yeah.
And their faces are all fucked up now, so he's like clearly disfigured. And,
Then
it, like, you know, like the film breaking in the theater, it kind of comes to a standstill, and like earlier in the movie, you find out that you're basically like in a room full of executives screening a movie. I guess that's it. You were just watching a movie in a movie. But on top of that, even further, this weird sequence happens.
Oh yeah, it's so,
I don't even understand it. Like,
I don't even know what they were trying to. I don't know like, it's so weird. Yeah, I don't know why they did this or what they were going for. If it was trying to be played for laughs, or it was just such a bizarre choice after this whole movie that just happened. Like, what the fuck?
That's what I mean. Like, you go up, you know, you kind of, the camera takes you up to the projection booth, and in the projection booth is just, I'm assuming they're supposed to be the actual monsters, not just people dressed.
Yes, they are. They are.
It's just, it's the Frankenstein's monster, and the Wolfman in the direct in the projection booth discussing the film, you know, busting, and they go on to be like, you know, like, well, we're still scary, and they go out to the theater.
Let's go in there and show them what monsters are really made of.
Yeah, and then they go and, like, you know, spook everybody out of the theater, and then hug each other, and the movie ends.
It was so weird.
It was so weird. Like, I was like, what is this ending? Like,
it was just. Yeah.
What are they trying to accomplish with that?
It just left you with a sour taste in your mouth. Like, it was just so...
I was just blown away by how many bad choices were made in this movie, it feels
Unfortunately,
like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't make... This movie as a whole just doesn't make sense to me.
It was a massive letdown.
Yeah, for sure.
That's really, like... All I have to say is just like, it had a good, it had a cool premise, you know, the whole freak in a, you know, getting unleashed and getting revenge, like, was cool. But yeah, man, it was a bummer. It was a letdown on so many reasons.
Absolutely. Yeah. But unlike a nice Perkins dinner, this was a letdown for sure.
Just with the title Grotesque, like, there should have been a lot more gore. There should have been, like...
Yeah. Absolutely, man. Like, and you know what bothered me? Was that there were, like, 3 or 4 different horror movies on Tubi called Grotesque.
Grotesque, yeah.
And I was like, damn it, dude. And we watched this one, which just turned out to be shit. Which makes, you know, it's what we do. But I was like, I bet one of those other Grotesque movies has got to be better.
Yeah, one of them sounds really... There's like a Japanese one where I was reading like the plot synopsis about this guy that like kidnaps these people and just like brutally like tortures them, and like you know, it sounds like something up my alley. But yeah, there's like another one with like this weird looking girl with like a mask on.
Oh yeah, yeah, that one looks interesting too. But yeah, anyway, so this, yeah, this movie, like you said, was just sort of bizarre. Is a letdown.
Huge letdown.
I honestly, like, I would score this movie like 3 Linda Blairs running through the snow out of 10, you know.
Yeah,
like, yep. not high at all. I don't want to rewatch this movie.
Never, you know, never. What I mean? Never. Yeah, I would give it 4 gyms nails on a chalkboard laugh out of 10. And I'll probably never if I never see this movie again in the rest of my life, I'll be totally fine with it.
Oh, absolutely, man. That's what I'm saying. Good. Yeah, it was worth us watching it, so maybe nobody else has to.
There you go. Absolutely. Yes. That's exactly what it was.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. Yeah.
Save you guys the pain of, I don't know. I just felt like I wasted my time with it. Like,
truly.
I didn't know there was really nothing in it that I enjoyed, you know, at least like in other movies. Like, there's parts that we talked about this before, like Sledgehammer. There's like at least like this like interesting like, you know, design of the killer, or it, you know. Yeah, there's just nothing to like with this movie, and
yeah,
felt like I just wasted an hour and a half of my life.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just, I don't know, film, the footage, the way it's shot, you know, it doesn't look that great, you know. Like, it doesn't hold up visually. The practical effects are few and far between and very underwhelming. Like,
absolutely,
you know, the performances are just
bad acting,
terrible.
The whole Linda Blair in it is just still so baffling to me.
And like, the fact that they tried to be like movie in a movie,
like
in
meta
a movie
with it, yeah,
with. It just did not, like, I did not care for it, you know?
Nope.
So, fucking well. 1988's Grotesque is will be on the bottom tier of the next tier episode we end up doing. You know?
I mean, that's just it though with this. It's like, you know, it's good to take gambles with movies because we've, you know, like Evil Dead Trap. Like we've had ones that have turned out to be fucking fantastic and I probably would have never, you know, watched it otherwise. So sometimes the gamble pays off the other way. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean that exactly. It's truly the fun of like picking out like, you know, the one like the one a week like horror to dedicate to this is like, you know, most of the time it is just that like we walk into it blind, maybe have heard like a couple of things about it, you know, but yeah, it could be good, it could be bad, it could be very meh, but you never know until you try. And there's a million and fucking one horror movies out there, so you might as well watch them.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, shit. I mean, I say we'll leave it there. Episode 94 in the books. We'll hopefully have a better movie for the next one, but you never know.
Never know. Yeah.
So make sure you go out there, eat some of that fresh caught tilapia at Perkins, and and you know, just keep looking for the new episodes, you filthy little corn dogs.
Yeah, before we know it, we're going to be at 100, and yeah, we got a nice little treat for that one, so stay tuned.
Exactly. Well, we'll see you on the next one.